Listeners of The Occult Unveiled, Ashley and I want to thank you for being with us since the series started. We want to keep producing shows for a very long time, and in order to keep them coming, I'm asking you to consider pledging to our Patreon and becoming part of a magical community. There are all kinds of cool perks on there, and you'll be able to help us with a small monthly pledge. You'll get advanced releases, bonus material, and most importantly, help our magical community grow. Please visit us at patreon.com/theoccultunveiled.
So in Ukrainian magic, everything is beautiful, useful, and magical. So whether it's a little bowl, a little pottery bowl with symbols, you know, painted on it, or if it's the clothing that you wear or the way you style your hair or anything, it all can be infused with magic. That makes a magical life when everything you do has that awareness. Yeah.
Hello, mystics, and welcome to The Occult Unveiled. We have a wonderful guest tonight, Madame Pamita, who, among other things, is my ultra Pokemon Go friend. But first, let me tell you about some upcoming episodes. We have Gregory Peters on the goddess Kali and Yogini magic, Alexis the Glamour Witch talking about occult and fashion, and Reverend Paul Nugent of the Aetherist Society, a New Age UFO religion. You can stay up to date on all of our episodes on Twitter or Instagram or by our website, theoccultunveiled.com. This week, I am pleased to introduce you to Madame Pamita. She's a Ukrainian diaspora witch, a candlemaker, spellcaster, and wonderful teacher. Welcome, Madame Pamita.
Oh my gosh, Ashley, it's so great to be here. Thank you so much.
So, Madame Pamita, I do a tarot card reading at the beginning of each show. Are you ready for yours?
I love a tarot reading, so I'm very ready.
You had some popper cards that came out. We have two of them. So your past card is the Five of Swords. And we know swords represent our mental state. So sometimes it's hard to let go of things. And it looks like in your past, you were really working on letting go of past issues in your life. And sometimes you were still picking up that sword to fight, even though there was no one there to battle you.
Very cool.
In your present, we have the Ten of Pentacles, and I'm glad that your house is in order here and that you are coming to an end of a cycle, and we see a lot of happiness in this card in your life. We're seeing the older generations mixed in with the family and even the dog. So do you have a pet?
I have two amazing cats, one of whom is a witch in a former life. Ooh. So yes.
That's amazing. And then lastly, we have your future card, which is the Chariot reversed. So sometimes we try to move ahead in our lives, maybe without all the information that we need, or maybe we're off balance. So what I urge for you in the future is just to make sure that we reflect, especially as there are six planets in retrograde right now. Make sure that we have all the pieces of information that we can gather before making a decision, so we maybe don't fall into a trap or making a mistake.
I love it. Thank you. I love that.
Yes. And, you know, I think it's so interesting as a tarot reader, getting your cards read, is always an interesting experience.
I love it.
Was there anything that surprised you?
Well, I think that absolutely is on the nose. I mean, I think the fact that, solving things in the past and reworking things in the past is a big project ongoing all our lives long. And that's an emphasis for me right now, for sure. And going forward, I tend to do that reversed chariot card. I jump in and I figure things out as I go along. When all these planets are in retrograde, probably not the best idea, because then I end up having to do everything two and three times to get it finished. So yeah, I see that for sure. That's me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's really great to talk to you in person because most of the time I interact with you through Pokemon Go. We're ultra friends now.
I know.
Ultra friends. This means that we have interacted over 50 times on the augmented reality game Pokemon Go.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed right now with Pokemon. That's my life.
Yeah, it's so much fun. And I love that it has the elemental workings as well. So you like, it's kind of magical in this weird way.
100%. I mean, I think of like, it's interesting. I find the gaming world, because I have gamer kids, my kids are gamers. And because of them, I mean, I was sort of a, you know, very casual gamer, but I got more invested in more games because of them, because we play games together. We play board games together, mm-hmm. and we play video games together. And one of the things I love about Pokemon Go, as if we're going to talk about that, is that it is a very, it reveals, if you look at it in a spiritual way, it actually has, I guess, a parable of what magic is about. Because if you understand the game, you look in the real world, it's that AI thing where you look in the real world and you just see a tree and some grass there. But when you look through your phone, and if you use the AI, you see this spirit there. And this, yeah. as a spiritualist, I think this is how the reality is actually, is that we can go in our mundane life and just see the grass and the tree. But if we start opening ourselves up to the spiritual realm, we start to see the life force that is around us, including having spirits or sensing spirits around us. And I think of those Pokemon being like a representation of that, where we're encountering these spirits. And, you know, that's such a beautiful parable for what we do as magicians, you know, especially as spiritualist magicians, you know, so yeah.
Oh my gosh. I will never look at Pokemon the same way.
Gotta catch them all. Gotta catch them all.
I love your books. Actually, the first book that I got of yours was the Candle Magic book. And I used that book to create a spell for peace in Ukraine that I shared on social media. And I see that you've been sharing a lot as well. As we pray for peace, and as a Ukrainian-American witch, what is the message that you want to share with our listeners?
Oh my gosh. Well, where do I begin? Well, I think that, you know, when we talk about magic and when I think about magic, I always think about merging practical things with spiritual things. So I always like to infuse my actions with magic and also back up my magic with action, you know? So doing things like fundraising, practical things, like even simple things like, liking a post that is showing, Ukrainian people or, Ukrainian culture, or learning some words in Ukrainian, or doing something like that can have a real, powerful impact and can be imbued with magic. So I think that that's how I live my life. My life is a completely magical life, not because I'm sitting in a tower doing magic, you know, like that, but because I'm doing magic in my everyday practical life as well. So, yeah. So I think there's lots of things we can do.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I got your book, The Baba Yaga, and I learned a lot about you and what you learned growing up. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about your history? Are you from Ukraine? Are you from America? How did you learn all this?
Well, I was born in the States. I was born in Santa Monica, California. So you can tell by my accent. I sound like the Californians, right? But I was born here, but my mom was actually born in Philadelphia, but my grandparents were from Ukraine and emigrated in circumstances that were very similar to what we're seeing now, where there was war going on. This is in the early 20th century. There was war going on and they were forced to flee. And so they came to the States to start a new life and got married here and had their kids here. And however, my grandmother practice the old ways of the old country. And we find that there's an interesting thing, you know, in many cultures, we find that people leave and go to a new country and they become integrated in some ways into that new country. What happens right after my grandparents left was that the Soviet Union took over Ukraine and suppressed a lot of spiritual practices, including the old pagan practices, because the old pagan practices had become part of the Christian practices. And of course, atheism was the state religion. So anybody practicing any religious thing other than being an atheist and, you know, being, you know, Viva Lenin or whatever was like, they were persecuted.
So wow, like burned at the stake or put in jail? What kind of persecution?
Well, I mean, there can be microaggressions up to all kinds of things, including we find things like people being imprisoned, taken into jail, dying in jail because of doing things that were against the state, or simple things such as like you can't get a job because you don't speak the, we want you to speak Russian and you're speaking Ukrainian. So it wasn't just, you know, spiritual practices, but cultural practices and all across the board. And so because of that situation, we had 80 years of that going on. In Ukraine, it was the diaspora Ukrainians who left, the ones who were forced to flee and go to other countries, Canada, Australia, States, and so on, that we find these practices were sort of kept and maintained in
Alive.
Yeah.
Diaspora, a population that is scattered across regions, which are separate from its geographical place of origin. In a sense, all humans are a diaspora from West Africa.
So we find it's very interesting that, yes, there are some people, you know, older people that still secretly practice these things, especially very rural people, you know, that still practice these things. But it was a lot of the diaspora Ukrainians who were able to practice these things freely, who could go back and then show and teach and remember and pass on these traditions. So it's, it's a very, very interesting cultural situation. But also, you know, that's how these practices were able to be saved.
In the underground and being able to come through your family lines.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Pythian Priestess, host of The Occult Unveiled. So many of my listeners have asked me, where can I get real supplies to start my craft? And the answer is to shop at Luna Lumi. Luna Lumi is a small Black-owned business that offers the Baby Witch Kit. This customizable kit includes your choice of an herb bundle of ethically sourced lavender, juniper, rosemary, cedar, or mugwort, and a large jar to keep it in. One selenite wand for cleansing your tools, tarot cards, or your aura, two candles with a candle holder, and a pentagram charm that you can enchant as an amulet. This kit also includes three vials of herbs, lavender, chamomile, and sea salt, and two vials of mini rose quartz and clear quartz crystal, and one big amethyst to get you started on your path. And Luna Lumi has offered a special discount of 20% off to all our listeners. Search for Luna Lumi on Etsy. That's LunaLumi. And use the code OCCULT for 20% off your order. When you talk about your family, in your book, the Baba Yaga book, you talk about a lot of almost mundane-like things, such as stitching or doing kitchen witchery. Is that something that you practiced in your family?
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's very interesting because when I grew up, when I was a little girl, about 10 years old, I can remember reading that witches, this is like a very distinct memory. I can remember reading that witches would turn around three times and bow to the full moon. And so I would go out in the backyard and do this thing, you know, where I read that, who knows, you know, in maybe some fiction book, I might've read it, who knows back then. But, in looking at that, you know, that looking for magic, I didn't realize that magic was right there next to me because I had a magical grandmother and a magical mother who would teach me these things, but they were so integrated into our lives that I didn't realize they were magic. I didn't realize that they were rituals. And so I longed to grow up in a magical household, which I thought was sitting around a cauldron making a witch's brew or whatever, but not realizing that folk magic was imbued in every aspect of my life, whether it was cooking, the cooking, the sewing, the stitching, and all of those things. It wasn't clearly spelled out for me. Like, you are making a magical symbol and this magical symbol is protective. No one told me that. They're just like, hey, look at this cute little stitching pattern. So it was almost like it was buried in there. And as I started to research for Baba Yaga's Book of Witchcraft, I started to uncover, oh my gosh, this thing that I did as a child is actually a magical ritual.
Baba Yaga's Book of Witchcraft, Madame Pamita's book on the ancient and modern Slavic magical practices through stories told by the legendary Baba Yaga herself.
It's a folk magic ritual, and that's where I started to see the connection and what I revealed, you know, in the book, what I reveal in the book. So what that does is, like we were just talking about with Pokemon, it makes everything magical, right? You start to think about your whole life being able to be infused with magic. So whether it's the food that you eat or the cleaning that you do around the house or
what's stitched into your clothes, right?
What's stitched into your clothes. I mean, all of these things. So in Ukrainian magic, everything is beautiful, useful, and magical. So whether it's a little bowl, a little pottery bowl with symbols, you know, painted on it, or if it's the clothing that you wear or the way you style your hair or anything, it all can be infused with magic. That makes a magical life when everything you do has that awareness. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like having that magical life. I was thinking about when I was reading the symbols, I remember that my family, my grandmother would sew grapes into some of her work. And I like never thought of anything that being potentially magical. My family's not Ukrainian. We're Swedish and German, but like maybe there is something there. There is some kind of everyday magic in our lives that maybe we're not even consciously doing, but has been passed down through generations.
So this book, book focuses, of course, on my own, you know, heritage, which is Ukrainian. It doesn't just apply only to Ukrainians. Eastern European people, Central European people are going to find a lot of crossover and commonalities, people in the Baltic countries and so on. I would say that, you know, for everything that's in there, you can probably find a corresponding folk magic practice, including Baba Yaga, Baba Yaga herself. We find a corresponding spirit we find many corresponding spirits in Central Europe and Germany and so on. In Germany, you've got Frau Perkta, you know, or Frau Berta. And Frau Perkta is like a witch that goes around in the wintertime, you know, similar to Baba Yaga. And she goes out and, you know, does sort of some of the similar things. We look at the story of Hansel and Gretel, a German story.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's a real crossover there's a witch. She lives out in the woods by herself. She's going to put the little kids in the oven and eat them. And that story has a corresponding, you know, version in stories of that include Baba Yaga. So when we look at these things, you know, I was finding things in Scandinavian stitchery and belt making and weaving in particular. And I'm like, this is very similar to Ukrainian magic. Not only with Central Europe and Scandinavia, though, we can find corresponding things in folk magic, in Ukrainian folk magic, in Latin American countries.
Yeah, across cultures.
Yeah, yeah. How and Celtic magic and so on. So we find, you know, we have more in common than differences. It's just the little unique flavor, the little spice, the little differences.
Yeah, the accent of that area. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. So for some of our listeners who haven't had the chance yet to read your book, Baba Yaga's Book of Witchcraft, tell me a little bit about Baba Yaga, the Witch of the Wood. What is her significance? Is she evil? Is she kind? Who is she?
The most kind of common touch point for her, for most Americans, would be like the witch in Hansel and Gretel. Most Americans are familiar with that story, right? So if you're not familiar with Baba Yaga, you do know the witch of Hansel and Gretel, and you know about this witch that lives in the woods. Well, the difference is that in Hansel and Gretel, there's one witch. She shows up in that story, and we never hear from her again. But in you know, Eastern European countries, we see versions of Baba Yaga show up in every culture, every country's wow. stories, and she shows up in multiple stories. She's never the star of the show. There's not a story, or let's say a traditional story, that's about Baba Yaga. She's always a character in someone else's story. So the hero or the heroine will be attempting to achieve some goal and in the fairy tale, and they will encounter Baba Yaga in the forest. Now, what happened was that we had these stories showing up with her name being different names. Well, in Russia, Alexander Afanasyev, he was the first one to write down these stories. So because he was writing the Russian version of the stories and they were the first ones to be published, people assume that she's a Russian spirit or a Russian character. Mm-hmm. She exists in Russia. There's no doubt about that. She's in many Russian stories, but she's not exclusive to Russia. So she's this witch that lives in a house in the forest, and the house stands on two giant chicken legs, sometimes four, sometimes one, but mostly it's on two legs. And mm-hmm. the house turns around. So the house is like this living being, and mm-hmm. you have to know the magic words to get into the house. Once you get into the house, you have an encounter with her. The encounter could be she's going to eat you. The encounter could be she's going to test you. And if you pass the test, she may reward you. Or if you don't pass the test, she'll punish you. Or she may be offering you some help or information. So she varies from being a helpful spirit to being an ogre and everything in between in these different stories. People in Eastern Europe have a great affection for her, even though she's like a kind of a cranky old witch.
Kind of scary, yeah.
In some stories, she's scary, but they have a deep affection for her. She's like the cranky grandmother, right? So mm-hmm. it's not like something that people are afraid of, because in Eastern Europe, witches and magical practitioners didn't have the big kibosh that was happening in Western Europe where they were burning witches at the stake and so on.
Okay.
Witches in Eastern Europe, they might get hauled into court. They might have to pay a fine, but that would have been the extent of it. So we have a different feeling about magic, a different feeling about witchcraft, and it became very integrated into even the Christian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, you know.
Yeah, practices. It really migrates. I see that. That's really cool, and I love that because of unity.
Yeah,
we like being there's actually something that unites us in a world where we're so divided. To see that, like, we are human and we share these similar experiences, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that with me.
She's intimidating. She's tough. She's smart. She's extremely powerful. And mm-hmm. as a spirit, it's if we go back, you know, this is the fairy tales are a way for there to be continuity and for stories from ancient times to be sort of continued on, right? If yeah. we say it's a fairy tale, then we can say anything and we can pass on these traditions without worry that the church or somebody else is going to say, you can't do that.
Yeah, so there's a secret message in there.
Yeah, yeah. So what happens, you know, with Baba Yaga, she's an old forest woman, protector of the forest, and a goddess perhaps, or a spirit that people would make offerings to. She also represents the idea of initiation, because if you look in ancient times, people would be initiated into groups, right? So if you were going to be a warrior, you'd be initiated into the group of the warriors. If you were going to be a magical practitioner, you'd be integrated into that and so on. But you'd have to go through an initiation. An initiation is not meant to stop you. It's meant to test you to make sure you're ready. So the tasks that the spirit of Baba Yaga in this day now will give you will be if you start to work with the spirit and people say, oh, I want to start working with Baba Yaga. Okay, be prepared, because it's going to be an initiatory experience. It's going to be something that, you know, pushes you farther than you think you can go to test you to see if you're ready to go to that level, to be that person.
That is so cool. I had no idea about that aspect or being initiation, I think, is very important and something that's not really talked a lot about, at least on the in the online occult space, where initiation is there to test your consciousness and make sure that you're ready to receive these messages, because I think that there's a chance that if you go too fast or you're not ready, you can really ruin your mind.
Yeah, I think it's also like, how committed are you to something, right? So if you are, you know, just dilly-dallying around and you won't go through an initiation. You won't do that suffering and that struggle that happens with initiation. It's not easy. Initiation is never easy. And if it were easy, it's like a, you know, a certificate of participation. Who needs that, you know?
No one wants that.
Yeah. So an initiation has to test you and try you and push you beyond your limits or what you think your limits are to not only show your own commitment, but to show you what you're capable of.
In the ancient Greek, the Eleusinian Mysteries. Eleusinian Mysteries, the most famous secret occult rites of ancient Greece. Plato had to go through 7 different tests, and one of them included like swimming across a raging river. And then he was put into a room full of women, naked women who were trying to have sex with him, and he had to refuse them. Like, it will push you to your limits. Mm-hmm. How do you think someone can know if they're ready for initiation? Are they ready to take on that challenge?
Well, I think it's self-selecting, right? You know, if you back down from it, there's no shame in backing down from an initiation. And I think I want to start out by saying that if you are, you know, if you think you're ready to do something and you go and then you discover as you get in, you're really not ready for it, it's okay. You know, in most situations, I'm not just talking about initiations where you're going to be initiated, let's say, into a coven or into, you know, I'm talking about your own self-initiation as well, or initiation with the spirits as well. Like my book, the book, you know, Baba Yaga's Book of Witchcraft was a full on an initiation because it was an extremely difficult book to write, to the extreme. Like had I known going in what I know now, I wouldn't have done it. But I went in and at each point I had a choice. I could either go, you know what, I'm not going to write this book, or you know what, I'm going to set this aside. Or I could have told my publisher, you know, I can't find enough information, or I could have backed out of it. But I knew that there was something at the end, an end result that was going to be powerful. And I also felt a responsibility in a lot of ways, responsibility to my publisher, my editor, responsibility to other people always helps me, but also to my ancestors as well.
Yeah.
To put this information out there and to get this out there for other, you know, Slavic witches who wanted to, you know, discover their own, you know, family practices, you know, which there is no book. I'm going to say this and not say it in an arrogant way, say it in a truthful way. There's no book about Ukrainian magic in English out there. There is none. You have to go into Ukrainian. So
yeah, that's what I was going to ask was like, if you don't mind sharing, was that struggle like having to find non-English texts and really like wade through them?
Yeah. So there's a few little things that are out there in English that were definitely great resources. The first book that I encountered that really sort of got me to say I could write a book about Ukrainian magic was, it's a book called The Word in the Wax, which is about, Slavic wax pouring healing rituals.
Oh, okay.
This is what my grandmother did. And my mom told me about it, but she didn't have all the information. She said like kind of randomly, like my grandmother used to pour beeswax into a bowl over someone's head. And it was kind of for healing, but it was also kind of for divination. And that's all the information I had. And so when I found this book that was, written as a doctoral dissertation by Reza Henchuk. I think Rina Reza, I can't remember her first name. But anyway, she wrote this book where she went and interviewed women that were doing this healing work still in Canada, Ukrainian women. So when I found that book, I said, oh my gosh, that's what my grandmother was doing. There is information out there. It's not just legend that I, you know, gets passed down orally. So when I found that book, I got very excited and I started and I did my book proposal and I got it all together. And then I actually had to do the digging, the research and all of that. And what I was finding was there wasn't a lot in English. There was very little in English. And every time,
it was hard.
It was very interesting. So we had these, you know, situations. Then I had to, I knew certain words in Ukrainian, but I didn't know how to speak it. You know what I mean? Like, you knew the food words and like the special holiday greetings and things like that.
Did you have to learn? You had to learn Ukrainian?
Yeah. Wow. So part of my routine, not only doing Pokemon every day, is doing my Duolingo Ukrainian every day.
Heck yes, that's amazing.
I had, you know, I'm still learning. I'm still a beginner, you know, for sure. But I'm actually now at the point where, like before, I wouldn't understand anything. Now I can understand like a word here and there when I hear people speaking. I can, you know, sort of read things really well too, actually. So I started learning how to translate, how to find documents, how to translate things. And I learned that research, which I had no experience with before. Like I never had to translate things when I was doing the research for my Candle Magic book. I've been doing Candle Magic for decades. You know, I found this book there, that, you know, source there and so on, but it wasn't
like
this.
You really had to go into like primary sources and find, that's, I can totally see how that's an initiation for you, where you are, when you're initiating yourself into the culture in a new way, and then you're becoming the primary source for English. That is one heck of an initiation.
Yeah. It takes two to three years to write a book.
Oh,
you
yeah.
come up with your idea, then you write a proposal, you send off that proposal, and then you have a year to write the book, or 9 months or whatever to write the book. And then you have to wait for them to put it together. Then you look at it again, and then you look at the galley and this and that. And then finally, after 2 to 3 years, your finished book comes out. Well, 2 to 3 years ago, I had no idea that there was going to be an invasion, that Ukraine was going to be in the news. Anything like that wasn't even on my radar. I'm not a person, I do tarot readings, but I don't do world events. I do one-on-one for the person, right? So when that book came out right at the time that Ukraine was in the news, I said, this is the boon. This is the reward. This is the thing that is like why the spirits were pushing me to do this book, why I was being initiated, why this was all happening, so that when people are interested in what's going on in Ukraine, oh, what's Ukrainian magic, thinks all the you know, witches, right? Now here's this book that's that resource right at the perfect time. Like weirdly.
That's so special. What a beautiful like journey that you went on, even though it was painful and hard. You
lots came of tears.
To the end. Yeah.
Lots of tears during that initiation, which is, I think most initiations, if they're for real, you will cry. It's like having a drill sergeant, you know, if you want to be a soldier, or, you know, you have to go through boot camp, it's not going to be easy. You're going to cry. You're going to want to go home. You know,
I'm writing my book right now. And I feel that I'm reading so much about sacred sexuality and being like, I'm going to be saying things that may not be popular. And that's hard. And I might not be popular. And that's part of my initiation, is learning that maybe not everyone's going to love you. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't let that voice get in your head when you're writing. You just got to write, you know?
Exactly. I wanted to talk about Baba Yaga in nature, because you were talking a lot about how she has this, first of all, cool little house with feet that reminds me of like Howl's Moving Castle, like my little like anime self coming out. But what role does nature have in Ukrainian magic? I understand that nature has a consciousness in a way.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, as you get into the book and you read this, and as I'm, you know, doing more and more research about the spirits, there are spirits everywhere, and the spirits are not. It's interesting. They show up in different ways. So we'll have something like the Lisuvuk, which is the forest spirit, the forest guy.
Forest spirit. In Slavic mythology, the forest spirit is seldom seen, but their voice can be heard in the forest, laughing, whistling, or singing.
He's the guy that looks, I think of him almost being like a Bigfoot kind of character. He's sometimes hairy, sometimes his skin is like bark, or he looks like a giant, and he can shrink down to a little, you know, hide behind a blade of grass. So very magical spirit that lives out in the forest. And if you look at this, you know, people who work in the forest, if you're going mushroom hunting, you're going hunting for food, if you are gathering, you know, berries, even to this day, people in traditional rural cultures will make an offering to the forest spirit before they go into the forest, not only because they don't want him to do something bad to them, but they want to honor the forest, because this concept of kind of quid pro quo, where you're offering something to a spirit and that spirit is going to give you a blessing or protect you or, you know, provide something for you. It's like this exchange. So making an offering of eggs or bread or porridge or something like that at the forest for the forest spirit before you go into the forest, it was existed alongside Orthodox Christianity. So that we have these spirits that are very alive and very real that are there, and they represent the spirit of nature. We also have, though, some things like Mother Earth. And when we think about Mother Earth in our culture, we think about, sometimes we'll think about, oh, it's like a goddess and she's wearing flowers in her hair or this and that. You'll see, you know, images, statues, and Mother Earth is like this woman holding
like the Gaia.
Yeah, exactly. But we're thinking of a personification of her. But for Ukrainians, the actual physical earth, the dirt and the ground is Mother Earth. The physical element is the embodiment of that mother. So they also see that not only are these spirits, like the spirit of the forest, who's a guy hanging out in the forest, but also the actual plant, the actual tree, the actual earth has the rocks, the mountains, whatever, have a spirit as well.
And a vibration, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We honor Mother Earth, not as a, you know, as a concept, but actually as the physical earth. You do things like you kiss the ground when you come back to your house, or you swear a solemn oath by putting a clod of dirt on your head. It's the physical earth that creates that magic. It's not a concept of idea of earth.
Right. Yeah. Wow, that's so interesting. I didn't know that. It really makes me think of like grounding. And like when you put your feet into the dirt and you reconnect to the earth, that you are receiving those negative ions that actually lowers your blood pressure. It lowers your heart rate, all of these amazing things. And that the earth is alive and it is sacred.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about kitchen witchery. Kitchen witchery. You may think that it's the latest winner of the Great British Bake Off, but in fact, the kitchen is an ancient sacred space where good health, luck, abundance, or even love can be conjured. So that is something that I think is alive in a lot of families. And in your book, my favorite part of it was bread making, because that's something my family and I used to do a lot in the German household. And I had no idea that our bread would always come out with the cracks on top. And according to your book, that's like a warning sign. I was like, oh no.
Well, I also think there's the idea that, you know, with any omen that you're looking at, it's like, first you look for a practical reason. I mean, maybe you were making, I've seen oh my gosh, I don't know if you do this, but I subscribe to like bread making on Instagram, and I see all these people making these beautiful, you know, loaves of bread with brown designs and white flour.
Yes,
and
so I know what you mean. Right?
Yeah. And so if you're, you know, making a bread with that is meant to crack on top, then you don't use that as an omen. It's when you're making bread that's meant to be smooth and it has cracks on top. So I probably should have added that in my book. But, you know, it's like an omen with anything. You're looking for something unusual, something out of the ordinary, something unexpected, not the usual. So if you're walking down the street and you see a pigeon, but you see pigeons there all the time, it's not an omen. Pigeon is not your spirit animal or your power animal, right? It's that they're normally there. It's when you see the animal out of the ordinary, or you see the omen out of the ordinary, that we start to look at it as a symbol or a message or a meaning. So don't worry about your cracking bread. If what your bread was, when you were expecting it to crack, that's not an omen.
Well, thank you for easing. But there are other foods too that are really important, like honey, and the bees are really important. Can you tell me and our listeners a little bit about the bee symbolism?
So honey is a huge production in Ukraine. Ukraine exports a bunch of honey. We have a lot of magic associated with honey and honey production. So in the villages, it's interesting because I think in most cultures we have gender, you know, divisions. This is women's work, this is men's work, and so on. That's, you know, old school, and that's the way things used to be. Now, of course, anybody can do any job. And we aren't even, you know, we're thinking beyond normal to gender even. So, but, you know, I'm teaching what was done before, not that you must, you know, slavishly follow it, but that you can understand where it's coming from, and then you can choose to adapt it or make it, you know, up to date or do whatever you want with that. But in a traditional village, the men would be the beekeepers and the elder men would be the like respected beekeepers because of course they had more experience and so on. The most respected beekeepers were called beekeeper magicians, beekeeper magicians, because they were so magical that they could, you know, corral the bees or talk to the bees or, you know, influence the bees in some way where a younger guy may not have that experience. So the beekeeper magicians was like the highest honor you could be given. It was to be called that. Wow, beekeepers would do. Yeah. So, I mean, it brings magic. It realizes that, you know, magic is really integrated with beekeeping. So the bees were seen as divine messengers. For people that are Christian, they would see messengers of God, but we would say divine messengers because beekeeping existed long before Christianity existed. And of course, you know, they were still seen as divine messengers. People would do things like, put decorated eggs called pesanki, which are those intricately decorated batik eggs underneath the beehives to protect the bees and to keep the bees well and to make there be a fruitful honey crop for that year. We would also see things like people having rituals around bees, honey being very magical, of course, beeswax being very, very magical. And people would make special beeswax candles on Stratenya, which is the Candlemas, and we call it Candlemas in English, but it's the time when spring and winter are meeting. It's the halfway point between spring equinox and winter solstice, right? So we would have a special candle that you would make and you would use throughout the year whenever you had to do some protection or healing or something like that. So lots and lots of magic, lots and lots of traditions around bees, beekeeping, honey, beeswax, and so on. Yeah.
Yeah. It reminds me of, I learned this when I went to the Jurassic Museum of Technology in Los Angeles, that the Victorians actually used to do something called telling the bees, which is a form of bee divination. And they would have to, especially around death, they would go and communicate with the bees and do some sort of work. There wasn't a lot of information, but that's something that fascinates me. And I see that also resonating in what you just talked about.
Yeah, that I know exactly that exhibit, and I know that museum. I've been there many times. I haven't been there lately, but I've been there many times. But the telling the bees is to, again, it's interesting because the telling the bees, I believe, I'm sort of little conjecture here, but this is probably a Celtic practice that infiltrated into English, and the Celts existed in Central Europe and migrated. So in Central and Eastern Europe, we have the influence of the Celts in Eastern European ancient Eastern European spirituality, because they were all hanging out in the same area. The area that my family's from is called Halicna, which is Galicia in English. We would say Galicia. Galicia is the Gaul lands, and the Gauls are another word for the Celts. So this is the area that the Celts were in. And so we find a lot of traditions that show up. Oh, it's like it's showing up over here in Scotland, Ireland, and Wales. And it's also showing up here in Ukraine and Eastern Europe, because we all have the same original influence at the beginning.
Yeah, that unity, we come back to it. I love it. So what do you think about the demise of bees today? And what can we do magically to help fight it? And, you know, of course, physically as well.
Well, one of the things is support beekeepers, because yes, there are wild bees, and lots of wild bees, of course, but we can, just like we can maintain bee colonies, you know, a beekeeper is not out to destroy bees. They want their bees to maintain and build new generations. So they're looking over their bees very carefully. I learned about beekeeping. I tried to have a beehive, but my bees took off. I wasn't a good beekeeper magician. Not yet, but one day. That's one another day. Project for another day. But beekeepers are very protective of their bees, and they want them to be healthy and they want them to thrive. So whenever we buy bee products, we're helping support the protection of bees, right? So when you buy beeswax, when you buy honey, when you do these things, you're helping support that beekeeper who in turn can then turn around and have more hives and do, you know, create more bees. So this is one way that we can support our bees and keep them alive. Of course, we can also go into other levels, like writing to our, you know, elected officials and asking them to eliminate these neonicotinoid insecticides that are dangerous to bad insects or undesirable insects, but also dangerous to bees.
Good insects. Yeah.
So we want to get educated about these things that are, you know, harming our insect life. I mean, we want to get rid of things that cause disease, of course, but there are so many insects that we need for this planet to survive and for food to survive as we know it.
So I don't own bees, but what I do is I actually have a glass dish that I fill with marbles. You can also get like the little rocks you put on the bottom of fish tanks and you fill it up with fresh water. You should be clean and purified water. And then I place it outside for the bees. That way they have fresh water to drink and they won't get their wings wet, especially now that we're in this terrible drought.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah. I mean, you can plant bee plants. If you have a yard, you can plant pollinating plants that bees like. That's another thing. Borage is a really great one for that. I mean, rosemary, bees love rosemary. I mean, there's lots of
I love rosemary.
Yeah. Yeah. Easy to grow. I mean, these are not hard to grow plants. You could just, you know, get a potted plant at the nursery and plant it in your backyard. And most areas it's going to be good to go, but find like the bee and butterfly and other ones, butterflies too, bee and butterfly plants, and plant those in your yard. There's so many things that you can do to help the bees, and they really don't take a lot of effort, or, you know, you do what feels comfortable to you, any of those things.
Yeah. And what energy level that you can give at, for sure. Yeah. So as we wrap up our conversation, I mean, I could talk to you for days probably, but unfortunately we do have to start wrapping up. What do you think about people opening their minds to the occult? And do you think that it can improve the world?
One of the things, I mean, that's now another hour we can talk about.
I know, there's so much here.
You have great questions. So with spirituality, I had a very wise man say something to me that I found that I really, like he said it very offhandedly, but I really have carried it in my heart, which is he said, there are 7.5 billion people in this world or whatever it is. I don't even know what it is now. Maybe it's 9 billion. Who knows? Anyway, there's 7 billion people in this world. He said there should be 7 billion different religions, meaning that each person's spiritual path should be unique to themselves. Now, it's helpful if you have structure, if you don't want to have to figure it out for yourself. It's not to say that if you follow an organized religion, that's you're wrong or bad or anything like that. But when we start to, I think older souls, people who are older souls start to think about, well, what works for me and what doesn't work for me? And I can design my own spiritual practice. Either it can be closely aligned to an existing spiritual practice, or it can be just completely my own unique practice. But finding that what works for you and calling that your religion, you know, finding what works for you and calling that your spiritual practice, I think is nothing but good, because then we start to realize that, yeah, this is my personal practice. Someone else can do the same thing or not. But I also see that someone else can have their own. And it's not then my religion is the right and everyone who doesn't believe in my religion is going to hell, is bad, is wrong, and they deserve to die. That's where we start to get into these problems with religious wars, because somebody says my way is the right way and your way is wrong. So when we start to delve in, so people that start to delve into the occult, unless they're going into an organized path like Wicca, they're going to have to create it themselves. And by creating it themselves, they start to realize and recognize that what's right for them is not, necessarily right for everyone else, and vice versa. So that's why I think that can bring enlightenment. Yeah.
Yeah, bringing in that respect for others. And I think that's really important, even though that we may be different, that there is a level of respect where I respect you as a human life. And I think that's something I hope we all learned from the last two very difficult years, is that every human life has value.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, think about all, I mean, there's so many people that we lost over the pandemic. And I think of all the art and beauty and, information and creation that is missing because that person isn't there. One of my favorite musicians passed away during that time. And I feel like, gosh, all the music that he's never going to make because he passed away because of COVID, at the beginning of COVID, it was when we had no cure or anything. So, yeah.
Yeah. Where can, people buy your books? I know I was so blessed to buy them from Llewellyn, but where else can people purchase your wonderful information and wisdom?
Well, I have three books out. One, the most recent one, of course, is Baba Yaga's Book of Witchcraft. I also have the Book of Candle Magic, which is also published by Llewellyn. And I have Madame Pamita's Magical Tarot, which is a book about tarot. It was published by Weiser. These books are all available at the usual places, your big bookstores, online, Amazon and all those places, of course. But I really encourage people to do something. If they want to have their actions make an impact, which I think is very much a part of conscious magic, is like your actions can be magical. Your actions have power and your actions can have impact. And this is the magic that I'm going to encourage all the listeners to do, which is to go to their local metaphysical mom and pop metaphysical store or little local bookstore and ask them to order it for you there. The reason is it has a profoundly positive impact. Yes, you can buy it on Amazon. It's super convenient, but you're just giving Jeff Bezos more money, and he's got more money than anybody in the world. So who cares, right? What is your impact? Right. But if you want to make a really profound impact, go to that little mom and pop shop and order it there. The reason is, number one, you're helping that little mom and pop shop stay in business so that you have a place to go get your magical stuff, or you have a place to go to buy your books. That has a hugely profound impact. Number two, when they order that book for you, it is very likely that they're going to order an extra copy or two for the shop. Mm-hmm. That gets my book in that shop, which is profoundly powerful for me because that means someone else is going to see it. And then it helps the publishers. It helps everything all around. And you're doing something good in the world. So if you can take a small tweak to your actions and do something that may be a little harder, like an initiation, but has a great, powerful, positive impact in the end, you can feel good about that purchase. Not only are you, it's like you're doubling up your good karma when you do that. So, yeah.
Well, thank you. And where can our listeners follow you on social?
On all the socials, I'm under Madame Pamita, M-A-D-A-M-E, P-A-M-I-T-A. No spaces, no underscores, no extra numbers, no extra letters. You know why I'm saying that, because we all have that problem with imposters. So just Madame Pamita, all one word. I'm on Instagram. I'm very active on Instagram. That's my most active. I have a Facebook account. I'm sort of over there once in a while, not too much. I have a Twitter account that I never look at, except if I'm going to complain about a company doing something wrong. That's that place where I'm like, hey, stop selling your product in Russia. That's what I do on Twitter.
Well, thank you so much for this amazing interview and sharing your knowledge of Slavic witchcraft with us. I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. What a lovely, lovely time to spend chit-chatting with you about something I love and I hope brings a lot of happiness and joy to people in the world.
Yes, and I'll see you on Pokemon Go.
I will see you on Pokemon Go. Open your present. Open your gift.
I will. And until next time, my dear listeners, stay magical. The Occult Unveiled is produced by F Street Productions and Imus for Magic. Our executive producers are Ashley Ryan, Michael A. Simon, and Scott Kushner. Our segment producer is Deborah Simon. Our audio producer is Bill Schultz. Our talent booker is Perry Turcott. Laura Kaufman is our coordinator. Thank you for listening. And for more information on any of the topics you heard today, plus really cool links and ways to learn about Ashley, Pythian, and all of our guests, go to theoccultunveiled.com website. The Occult Unveiled, copyright 2022.